good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever and whenever you're watching us and joining us. So, welcome. Today I'm talking to Adam Cameron from Banange Brewing in Uganda. I know I sound fluent, but Adam's just told me how to say it. So, so you just have to take my word for it. He'll probably pronounce it even better in a second. So, so Banange is in Kampala in Uganda. But you can tell us, Adam, you've been around now for a few years, I think, but yourself and your founder, you're not from Uganda.
No, I grew up in Canada.
All right.
Moved to Uganda almost 10 years ago.
Okay.
I grew up in Ottawa, studied engineering. I had always wanted to work in the energy industry. And shortly after graduating, moved to Uganda, got a 6-month research internship in the solar industry. And 10 years later, here I am. So
basically you went from Canada to Uganda and just stayed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty much. Okay.
There's lots of people in Uganda who have that story. So to those of you out there across the world, just come for a visit. Maybe it will pull you in as well.
Right. Yeah. Because I'll be honest with you, I don't have much of a clue about Uganda. I know where it is and, you know, but I don't really have much of a clue of, you know, even climate, I suppose. I mean, it's a big country.
Climate, it's perfect. Yeah, it's sort of between 22 degrees and 27 degrees pretty much the entire year.
Okay.
If it goes down to 20 degrees, everybody complains about how cold it is. If it gets above 28, everybody is complaining about how hot it is. So,
right.
Yeah. Sounds the ideal weather.
Yeah, I don't know. For an Irish person, it sounds maybe 2 or 3 degrees too high, but
too hot. Yeah. All right.
Not at all. But okay. So I mean, so you were settled there. Your co-founder isn't Ugandan either, but he's not. He's Icelandic, is it?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so Paul and I, we met, I guess almost 10 years ago now, through an outdoors club in Uganda. And we started Uganda's, to our knowledge, first and only home brewing club.
Okay.
He was an avid home brewer back in Iceland. Myself, I only picked it up when I moved to Uganda. There wasn't many beer options.
Right.
So yeah, it was brewing for personal consumption, and then over the years it got better and better, and we eventually decided to try and turn it into a business.
Right. Well, before we get around to that, so what is it about Uganda apart from the climate that kind of attracts people to stay there?
It's an incredibly exciting country, very young population. I think 50% of Ugandans are 14 or under. So lots of change. And I guess when I moved here, I was interested because the energy industry still has a lot of development and a lot of infrastructure to build. Okay. So less than 80% of Ugandans are connected to the electricity grid. So you can imagine how many sort of power stations and transmission lines need to be built.
Yeah.
And my feeling in those days was it would be easier to convince governments that hadn't built anything yet to go renewable than to compete against existing infrastructure.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, just kind of skip one generation.
Exactly.
And so in terms of natural resources, like in terms of oil and any of that, it's not a big industry. There isn't much there.
They are developing oil now. It hasn't started flowing yet, but probably soon. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So you arrived, you were working away. And from what I understand, like you said, a lot of kind of outdoor life, a lot of, lot of stuff going on there. And then, yeah, I think that's kind of the same message I get from, like, I've spoken to people around the world now, and a lot of them are, when they came from another country, the reason they set up is kind of what you said, like, it's because they're used to different beers at home and you can't get them where they are. So they just start home brewing and then it kind of grows from there. So it sounds like the same story you had.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah, there was actually two craft breweries that existed before Benange, and both of them went out of business eventually. But one of them, as it was going out of business, they approached us, "Do you want to buy our equipment?" And that's kind of set off the spark for us. You know, hey, maybe we could we could turn the business. Yeah.
So at that stage, just to go back, so you'd been home brewing and you'd been kind of distributing it to friends and that, and that's how they knew about you.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So we did. We did one test. We had a little sort of 30-liter homebrew system, and we brewed a bunch of batches. Had, I don't know, 300 or 400 bottles, and we were friends with one of the local bar owners, who's still a very good customer of ours. And we sold them the 300 bottles, and we sort of told ourselves, if we can sell these at this bar within a week, we think we can make this work as a business. And it was like less than 2 days and everything was sold. So it sort of gave us the vote of confidence to take the plunge. Yeah.
Right. And was there much like, how easy is it to get kind of finance and stuff to set it up? Or?
So not easy, but yeah, we did a lot of networking. We were lucky enough to find about 20 angel investors, mostly all based in Kampala, a mixture of sort of internationals and wealthy Ugandans. And that, yeah, funded the first phase of the brewery.
Okay. And before,
and actually the equipment that was offered to us, we never ended up buying in the end. The owners of the previous craft brewery, although they had approached us to buy their equipment, internally couldn't agree on a price. And then one of them decided to ship the equipment to Ethiopia, where he was going to start again. But we had sort of become fixated on the idea at that point. And yeah, we're lucky enough to be able to find the money to import equipment from China and make it work.
Okay. Okay. So yeah, so probably a bit more expensive than you'd anticipated first day.
Probably, although the previous craft brewery had Blickman equipment, so yeah, we never got to pricing, but I suspect it would have been, yeah, as expensive or more secondhand than what we ended up buying. Yeah.
And so before that, like when you were starting up, so two craft breweries had died basically. Mm-hmm.
What, yeah.
Which is, I don't know. I mean, I know you sold your first batch, but I mean, that is not a good sign that the only two.
No. Yeah, I guess we felt like our beer was better than theirs, I guess, was the main thing. We were confident in our product. But they were both operating as like a brew pub model. So they only sold on site. And we sort of felt that it needed to be a production focused brewery that's selling to a number of different bars and restaurants to be sustainable.
Okay. And you're doing that. I mean, if I saw right
from
your website, you're on tap in a number of bars and then, but you have a big distribution for bottles and that.
Exactly. Yeah.
And is that easy to get, or like how difficult is it to distribute there?
So you need to do it yourself. I guess we're a very small brewery on the global scale, but we're Uganda's third largest brewery. The biggest one is owned by AB InBev. The second biggest one is owned by Diageo. So we're, especially when it comes to distribution, we're definitely competing with the big guys. And yeah, they would own sort of all the fridges, all of the draft systems in the country. So those were sort of the challenges that we started walking into as we started doing our own distribution. But compared to friends with breweries in North America or Europe, when I speak to them, you know, just to get a meeting with a restaurant owner can be quite difficult for them, because there's so many craft breweries now and you're competing against so many different ones. It's very easy for us to get the initial meetings, but harder to
persuade
to find sort of, yeah.
Okay. So yeah, the, I mean, the I suppose if the two big breweries are basically, like I said, AB InBev and Diageo, is that like the vast majority of the market is presumably one lager or something, one or two lagers, and not much
yeah,
else?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they have they'll each have a few lagers, relatively similar. There's some stouts as well. So with Guinness Foreign Extra, and AB InBev has a competitor for that as well now. But yeah, when we entered the market, it was only lager and those stouts.
Right. Yeah. So it sounds pretty standard, really, from when craft beer starts everywhere. It's just very limited choice. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, so again, my knowledge, like I said, of Uganda is pretty non-existent. But what I got just from picture of, and I might be completely wrong on this, but from your website and where your distribution is, it seemed like a lot of it might be a tourism market. Or am I completely wrong?
There's definitely a lot of internationals drinking Benange. And in the early days, sort of the expats living in Kampala were, you know, what kept us alive. But more and more, we're sort of converting Ugandan lager drinkers to appreciate more flavorful beers. And we sort of saw during COVID when lockdowns came to Uganda, and during the early months of COVID, much of the international and expat population left the country. So we really learned sort of the importance of building a strong domestic customer base. Right. So all of our marketing and focus is now on finding Ugandan customers.
Right. And that doesn't mean, I mean, you don't have distribution into supermarkets or things like that.
No, we're in, yeah, like all of Uganda's major supermarkets.
Okay.
Carrefour is sort of the internationally known one that has, I think, 5 or 6 stores in Uganda, and we're selling in them, and then a bunch of smaller supermarkets as well.
Right. And are you doing a lot of marketing? You said there that you've kind of retargeted it. Are you doing a lot of it, or is it all word of mouth?
Mostly word of mouth and sort of low-cost marketing. No, obviously, yeah, we can't compete with AB InBev or Diageo when it comes to marketing, let's say. So we're finding ways to be creative and try and play a slightly different game than they're playing.
Right. Excuse me, I've got this tickle in my throat. I just apologize to everyone. I've a bit of a tickle in my throat today, and it's just keeps coming back. So I'm thinking out loud because I was thinking the tourism angle came because I was talking to someone in Zambia a couple of weeks ago, and they were saying that they had a big market in, you know, kind of nature resorts and, you know, tourism.
So yeah, tourism, it's definitely a market for us. I'd say it's probably, I don't know, 10 or 15% of our sales.
Right.
The difficulty that we have with it actually goes back to distribution. Most of the tourists, they don't spend too much time in the capital. They're mostly in the national parks and these sort of hard to get to places that are, you know, incredibly beautiful and amazing wildlife and everything else. But for a craft brewery that's doing their own distribution, it's hard to get them the beer.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now that you say it, like you'd be talking about going out for a few days to do it for one delivery, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So Kampala,
far apart and bad roads as well.
And then, well, yeah, you're still at 27 degrees. You need refrigeration then as well, I suppose. So Kampala, what size is it? What's the population?
I think it's officially 2.5 million people. But I guess, like many sort of cities in developing countries, it really depends where you sort of draw the boundary lines of the city. There's quite a bit of urban sprawl now.
Right. But basically, it's big enough just to, you know, it's one city that's big enough. It's a big enough market to keep you sustained for a long time.
Yeah.
Right. So that is, like you said, there is no point in kind of looking outside when you have a very untapped market right on your doorstep.
Yes, and certainly in terms of people's like purchasing power, most of the sort of well-off people in Uganda would live in the capital as well. So,
okay, so that I guess that brings back the question of, you know, is there a big price difference between you and the standard lagers or the Guinness or whatever?
Sorry, it cut out there for a second, but I assume you're asking about pricing.
Yeah, the pricing. Like, is there a big difference because you need Kampala?
I guess there's a big difference between our prices and the sort of prices of the macro brewed lagers. We're definitely considerably more expensive. Was that your question? Or
that basically answers it. I was just wondering. I kind of assumed that was the case because you have a big market as well that you're saying you're focusing. All your malts are coming. They're locally sourced malts, are they?
Yes. Our I guess pale would be local. But for specialty malts, we import from it's Vermin that we're getting actually. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and you wouldn't. Yeah. Again, you wouldn't have the same scale as Diageo to buy it bulk. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And how much do you brew? What is your capacity?
We're doing roughly 4,000 liters a month.
Okay. So. And do you have capacity to grow on that, or do you need a new premises or new equipment?
We've got some more tank space. The brewery is getting tight. When we first started, we had, 5-6 fermenters, and we've imported a few more now. So we've now got some tank space to grow. The brewery is pretty crammed as it is. Once we sort of reach capacity with these tanks, we might be looking at a new place.
Okay, I mean, that sounds positive. It sounds like you're pretty established now and that you have a path to grow. You're not like the previous two breweries that are kind of hanging on by your fingernails. You're not iffy.
Yeah, no, it's exciting. You know, our sort of brand awareness is definitely increasing. Just this week, I got an email from Uganda Airlines interested in serving our beer on board, and sort of every month more and more people are becoming converted to Bonange customers. So yeah.
Good. But actually that raises a question for me on against the macros. All the macros that are there, like they said, they're owned by multinationals, but are they brewing in Uganda are they considered local beers, or are they importing a lot and you're competing on that?
No, they're considered local beers. The way the tax laws work in Uganda, if it's imported, you're going to pay a much higher tax. So for the macros, where it's a very price sensitive market for most of their brands, it's brewed locally.
Right. Yeah. And like I said, they're competing on price. Do they have any kind of premium brands there that they're competing
on? They would have, AB InBev is importing Budweiser and Stella now, if you call that premium.
No.
And they have sort of three tiers, I guess. Their top tier they would call premium, but it's still probably almost half the price of our beer.
Okay. So you are in a very, you have whatever sector of the market you have is completely yours.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's kind of good and bad because, yeah, you have it yourself and it is giving you extra money probably, but yeah, it's that very top of the market.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, the sort of pains or challenges that we go through are probably more similar to the very, very early craft breweries in Europe or North America, where you're sort of introducing completely new flavors to people, introducing the concept of why you should pay more than you know, 60 cents for a beer. So it's, yeah, different challenges, but exciting.
Right. So, yeah, if you're doing that, you're trying to introduce it. I mean, what craft beer is kind of known for coming out of America, especially, is like the IPAs and the just hops, hops, hops.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, like you said, most people are drinking lager. So which way are you going? Are you trying to go with that extreme side, or are you trying to slide them in to...
Definitely slide them in. So I think for people who are sort of craft beer connoisseurs, none of our beers would be considered extreme. And just sort of a personal preference note, it's one of my sort of complaints about the craft beer industry back home. When I'm back in Canada, it feels like everyone is trying to outcraft each other, throwing, you know, crazy ingredients in, or insanely hazy or bitter or juicy or whatever. Yeah. It's nice that we don't really need to get into that, I think.
Yeah,
we do some specialty batches where we'll do, you know, a double IPA or something a bit more crazy for the craft beer fans in Kampala, but that's a pretty small market. Yeah,
right. Yeah, well, I mean, you're in a way you're a kind of the head of the trend, because it all seems to be coming back. People coming more around to lagers and pilsners, and that seems to be the new coming back.
Yeah,
because I know. Mm-hmm. Like my brother doesn't drink, well, he doesn't drink much craft beer, and like he just keeps complaining it's all hops. He doesn't like the hops. And he went into a bar and they said, "Oh, we have 20 beers, 20 different beers, all hop based." And he's like, "I don't want hops. I want something."
Yeah, definitely the case. And I don't know. I hear sort of non-alcoholic or low alcohol beers is now the new trend as well.
Yeah.
That might eventually come to Uganda, but I think right now, especially the domestic market is probably more looking for higher alcohol than lower alcohol.
Okay, and just looking for better quality of what they're already drinking.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so it makes sense, and I mean, I think, like I said, it's coming around. I think, like I said, that whole extreme thing is basically, as you mentioned before, like the market in Europe, in America is all, it's so competitive. It's just trying to stand out by doing things.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, some, you throw, I don't know, a piece of fried chicken in, I've heard, you know, as almost a marketing stunt.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely no chicken in our beer. That's for sure.
That's our new slogan now. You can think, yeah. No chicken in our beer. Yeah. That's a good one actually. But yeah, no, it is. I mean, I think everybody's seen it, and yeah, at the end of the day, people will come back around to what they've been drinking all along, or come into, and then just slowly maybe change. So yeah, so I mean, I accept Uganda. I'm trying to think what else there is. We discussed the tourism side, so that's not a big aspect for you, just purely based on Kampala. But
yeah, I think. I mean, we'd love to sell to more of the sort of tourist lodges.
But you can't get
it
there.
It's just getting the distribution sort of solved, I think, that has been our challenge on that front. And yeah, as I said, like during COVID, we had a couple lockdowns and we saw our revenue drop like 75% twice. So it was a strong reminder of how we really need to focus on the domestic market and build Ugandan customers, because, you know, they're going to stick around. And I think as well, for many of the expats, you'll come to Uganda to work for a couple years and then you go. So maybe they'll be good Bonange customers for those 2 years that they're here. But it's quite different from Ugandan, where if we can convince them that Bonange is a better beer and is worth paying for, he's going to drink our beer for 40 years.
Right. What does the name mean, actually? That's something I've had down here, Bonange.
Yeah, so the direct translation is all my friends, but it's used as an exclamation, which would sort of correspond to how we use oh my god or oh my gosh. So yeah, you'll hear it all the time can you believe that? Or, banange. Yeah.
So you don't have people ordering your beers by mistake? Or is that part of the marketing plan?
Yeah, I think so. But no, certainly it's a funny surprise when Ugandan finds that it's a Canadian guy who's running the company.
Your other thing on it I saw as well was, I mean, it's all bottles. Is it bottles across Uganda or there's no cans or anything?
No canning, but draft as well. So yeah, we've got where the brewery is located, we're sort of attached to a restaurant. We've got draft in there, and then five or six and growing, we'll add another one beginning of next month. Draft locations, and then the rest is all bottles. Yeah.
Okay. And you see that growing? Like, is there a big demand for draft there?
It has sort of ebbed and flowed. So Niall, the AB InBev owned brewery, was the only brewery that had draft when we launched. And then during COVID, they shut it down completely. And since then, they've relaunched it.
Okay.
So it is a bit of a culture change issue with draft as well. The prevailing belief amongst Ugandans is that you want your beer to be sealed until it comes to the table.
Okay.
So most bars and restaurants, they'll serve it to you in a bottle and they'll open it in front of you. And that's sort of like a safety type guarantee, I guess, that you know it hasn't been tampered with or anything, and that it's the real product. You're not getting something sort of homemade and filled. So draft was definitely a foreign concept for Ugandans at the beginning. Definitely some resistance around like, how do we know it's the real thing? But I think timing wise, we were lucky that Niall had done it a couple years before us and sunk a bunch of money into it. So they had already started to make Ugandans aware of.
Right. And they basically, like everywhere else, that they kind of pay the bars for their tap space.
Yes, and they actually own the draft systems as well.
Yeah.
So the towers and coolers and everything else is owned by Niall. When we do draft, yeah, we need to import our own and place that within a bar as well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's the same that they do everywhere, isn't it? They, you know, they really pay the bars.
It depends on the market, actually. Yeah. I guess they pay the bars everywhere.
Yeah.
But a lot of bars in Canada will have their own walk-in coolers and their own draft systems that they own. And it's the breweries that sort of slot in kegs.
Right.
But it seems to be quite sort of country or market based.
Okay. No, I'm just thinking like in one way or another, they pay them either by owning the draft or, they pay to do up the bar, but on condition they only sell.
Yes. We get a lot of that as well. Sadly, when we go pitch, a bar or restaurant owner, you can see their eyes light up when they hear that we're a brewery, because the instant assumption is sort of, what can I get out of them? Or, they expect our pockets to be as deep as AB InBev or Diageo. So definitely some customer education on that front as well.
You play down the third biggest brewery then at that point.
Yeah. Invite them over to see the brewery and make them realize that it's just a few hundred square meters. Yeah.
And you don't sell in the brewery itself, do you? Because I saw you do tours, but
So I guess we're attached to like a sister restaurant that is sort of our tap room.
Okay.
And we sell there, yeah.
Okay. And you do, like I said, you do tours as well, and that for...
Yep.
Are they...
Yeah, exactly. Sorry?
I just said, are they popular? Do you get a lot of people coming in? Are they locals because they know of the brewery or because it's the only brewery?
They
just out there? who do you get touring it?
Mildly popular, a mix of Ugandans and tourists. I would say probably more tourists or expats than Ugandans interested in the tours. But it's something that's growing for us.
Okay.
When we opened the brewery, we had an Icelandic brewer that was helping us set up the equipment. And he was telling us, like, you guys are really going to need to create schedules or limit the number of tours you do. You know, in Iceland, where the brewery's distracted because there's groups coming to do tours every day of the week. It's this giant headache. And we really haven't experienced that. People like to sort of stick their head in and see the gear, but they're more into drinking the beer than seeing how it's made generally.
Which is what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, where do you think it's going? So in Uganda, excuse me, where do you think it's going for Benangair and for beer generally in Uganda? Is it getting... Actually, before we get there, there's one question I did have. And maybe it doesn't apply so much where in Kampala, where you are, but is there a lot of kind of traditional brewing happens? Or...
Yes, definitely. Yeah, the big breweries I was talking, they sort of have three tiers of beer, I guess, in terms of quality and price. I think 60 or 65% of their sales would come from the lowest tier, which they would almost exclusively sell upcountry, so outside of Kampala.
Okay.
And these are, yeah, it would be like a 500 ml bottle, 7% sold for, I don't know, 40 cents or something. And that's their biggest market. And if you speak to people who work for the big breweries, their focus, they always talk about the illicit alcohol market. And that is these sort of locally made beers or locally made alcohols. And I think in the big breweries' mind, more and more we're coming on their radar and maybe becoming a small competitor of theirs in the capital. But certainly sort of en masse, they would see their competitor as illicit alcohol or tax-free sort of homemade alcohol.
Yeah. Okay. So hopefully that makes sense. Sorry.
Yeah, I think there's almost 50 different tribes in Uganda. And each tribe would have its own slight variation on an alcohol. Some are gins. So there's a drink called Waraji, which is comes from war gin, which is sort of a locally distilled alcohol, which is quite common. And then a bunch of things, not exactly beer, but more similar to beer, fermented grains.
Okay. Right. And so, yeah, like you said, that's about 60% of the market from what you can gather from
the big breweries. Yeah. Right. Or they would say actually that the illicit market is much bigger than the legal market. I think they claim that it's like, I don't know, three or four times as big as their businesses. but it's really hard to know for sure, because it's in very rural, sort of hard to reach places that most of this is happening. But yeah, 65% of their business would be from their out of the capital sales, let's say. Yeah.
Okay. I misunderstood it. Well, that is a lot. That means, I presume, they're not going to worry so much about you, but they're going to be worrying more, like maybe you can stay and not be kind of in their sights for a while.
Yeah. I don't think we're certainly not, a threat to their bottom line anytime soon. More and more we see, as you were asking earlier about sort of marketing. So we're getting into more events and either hosting our own or sponsoring external events. And this is where we've run into a little bit more sort of direct competition with the big breweries. Everything they sponsor, they want sort of exclusivity over the beer or alcohol sold there. So we maintain a friendly relationship with them, and they're sort of staff, but definitely starting to run into some competition.
Right. Yeah, I've seen the same thing here with, well, I suppose everywhere with events. There's a festival, music festival up the country in Ireland, and the local brewery nearby just couldn't get in the door, just wasn't allowed near it because it was sponsored by Heineken, and that was it, you know?
Yeah. And the money that they can throw around is so huge that it's, you know, for the small guys, it's not possible. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to be a lot more targeted on exactly where you're going to spend your money.
Yeah, for sure.
So come back around then. So where do you see the market going in Uganda as a whole, Kampala, and for Bananga? Where do you see, like, is it going to keep growing at the premium end, or?
Yep. So Uganda is developing really quickly. I think when I moved to Uganda 10 years ago, I think there was maybe 3 or 4 traffic lights in the whole country. And now there's probably 50 or something. I think we hope to sort of continue being the quality beer producer in Uganda. And as Ugandans' sort of income grows, and as they come to appreciate the finer things in life, we're confident that we'll be able to convince more people to drink Bananga.
Right. And does that end up then with you selling to the big boys, or are you determined to stay in the
middle? We hear that, like, you know, at a certain point they're going to come to us with offers. I don't really see that happening anytime in the near future. I would be certainly open to speaking to them down the road, but I think it's a long, long way from that happening. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I suppose it comes down to, no matter how much you enjoy it or how much you like staying independent, everyone has a price that at some point you will say, this is crazy money.
Yeah. And I mean, I think distribution and marketing are incredibly powerful as well. So to be able to piggyback off their distribution network, or, you know, even just to be able to sell into their exclusive events, like literally every big football match, every big concert is sponsored by one of the big breweries and has exclusivity. So just that access would be huge for Bananga.
So yeah. So then, listen, I'll let you go in a second, but where, okay. So if there's somebody coming in, you're now going to be found on Ugandan Airlines. So people coming into the country will be able to get you. Where should they look for you then when they get there?
Yeah. If you're coming to Kampala, my favorite bar in the country is called K-Pasa. It's in Kisementi. It's busy every day of the week, so you always find a good crowd there. We've got a draft system. You're welcome to come to our headquarters. We've got 6 different beers on tap there. Check out our website. We'll update that with sort of the up-to-date locations of where we're sold. And you can follow us on social media at Bananga Brewing on Instagram and Facebook.
Very good. I'll just show up here, actually, just while I'm doing this, if I can find how to do this again. No, I've lost it. I was going to try and put up the website address there, but it's banangabrewing.com anyway, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Great. I found how to do it. Let me see if I can do this. We will see how good I am at operating this. I should try it more often. There we go. It's going to come across the bottom.
Beautiful.
So thanks, William. I don't know, is there something I should have asked you that I just didn't know enough to ask you that seems completely...
No, I think you've covered it all. To everybody out there, come to Uganda, drink Bananga, you won't be disappointed.
And then from the sound of it, you'll stay for 10 years. And
yeah, exactly. It'll change your life for sure. Maybe not the beer, but the country.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty good note to end on. Like I said, I've never been there, but maybe someday I will get to visit. We'll see.
But you're always welcome.
All right, we'll check it out. So listen, thanks a million again, Adam. It was that was Adam Cameron from Barangay Brewing. So yeah, just follow and subscribe, the usual things, if you want to keep up with more chats with more equally interesting brewers and their stories. And yeah, we'll see you again soon. Thanks, Adam.